It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter to join the conversation. Good morning, everybody. Lance, welcome back. A lot of news since we were last with you. The Giants have hired a new offensive coordinator, Ben McAdoo, former quarterbacks coach, and before that, tight ends coach for the Green Bay Packers, has been under Mike McCarthy for a long time. And a couple days ago, the Giants also announcing they decide to let go two of their longtime assistants here, tight ends coach Mike Pope, who has coached with Tom Coughlin as far back as the 80s here with the Giants, and the Giants also releasing running back coach Gerald Ingram, who's been with Tom Coughlin since his days coaching at Boston College. So the Giants, we figured they'd have a bit of a shakeup on the coaching staff on the offensive side of the ball. John Mariner's postseason press conference called the offense broken, and we have seen just that.
They lived up to their words thus far, the Giants, as they have shaken up Tom Coughlin's coaching staff. A bit of a surprise in terms of Pope and Ingram, considering how long they've been with Tom Coughlin. And whenever you mention the word, or the name, I should say, Mike Pope, you talk about all the great tight ends that he's been able to transform. And I don't think Brandon Myers' subpar performance this season is a reflection of Mike Pope's work. It's more of the fact that Myers just couldn't adjust to what they had asked for him, but clearly they're going to go in a different direction. And the other thing to keep in mind is, even though they do lose Mike Pope, McAdoo, as you mentioned, has a great track record of working with tight ends. He helped transform JaMychal Finley, Tom Crabtree, and Andrew Corliss in terms of what they were able to do within the Packers system. So that's at least somewhat of a positive. And there's speculation that maybe he'll utilize Adrian Robinson in some capacity, because he's taken tight ends who have not really been coming into the league with a great resume, and they've been very productive within the Packers system.
Well, Adrian Robinson has to figure out what it takes to be an NFL player first. Again, I'm not going to put his lack of development on Mike Pope. I don't think that's fair. I think a couple of things to note with those two coaches. I think it should be noted that those are two of the older coaches on the coaching staff. I think perhaps there's a thought that you need to get some new ideas in here, get a little bit younger. I think that might be part of the deal here with the Giants with these moves. But I think overall it just shows that, even more so maybe than we thought when the season was over, this team really wanted to go in a new direction with the offense, and I think we're going to see it.
And I'm sure McAdoo, keep in mind, is probably going to want to bring in or recommend some assistants to work under him that he's utilized in the past. So, you know, normally when a new guy comes in, regardless of what the head coach thinks, McAdoo probably has certain people that would fit his system and fit the type of strategy that he wants to employ here. So I wouldn't be surprised if we find some Packers-related coaches moving towards the New Jersey area.
Also, the potential remains that maybe the Giants could rejigger the guys still left on this offensive staff if you want to change some of their positions. There are rumors that they're still interested in Mike Sullivan as perhaps a quarterback's coach if you can't find an offensive coordinator spot somewhere. That doesn't necessarily mean Sean Ryan would be let go, but perhaps put back at a different position. That's something we'll have to keep an eye on moving forward. And I think Giant fans, though, are very excited, Lance, about this shakeup overall.
Well, McAdoo comes from a system that has flourished over the last few years, and the fact that he's worked under a guy like Mike McCarthy, I think, is a positive. McCarthy was with McAdoo. We're talking about dating back to the days in San Francisco. So they've really provided McAdoo with a mentorship to some degree, where he's been able to study under Mike McCarthy. He hasn't called plays, but you have to keep in mind, considering he's worked under McCarthy, he's learned from one of the best play callers in the NFL. So I think that's a real big positive. And if you look at some of the players that he's groomed, that also is a reflection of his coaching style and his coaching ability.
And talking to Mike Spofford yesterday from Packers.com, and folks, if you have a chance, go to Giants.com, go to the archive, go to iTunes, check it out. You can listen to that interview that we conducted yesterday. And he made the point that over the course of the last couple years, every year, and even game to game at times, he would assign different assistant coaches different parts of the game plan. So one assistant coach would get the red zone. One assistant coach would get third downs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think to a certain extent, that probably gave McAdoo a bit of a prepper course to get ready to be an offensive coordinator.
Well, and the fact that he's been a tight ends coach and a QB coach means that he can work with a variety of different positions. So I think that's also somewhat of a positive. And the fact that the Packers, like other organizations, have shown that when one guy moves on, remember Philbin leaves to get the Dolphins job, they then boost Tom Clements to offensive coordinator, and that opened the door for McAdoo to move to QB coach because the 6 years prior, he was working primarily with the tight end. So whenever a guy moves up, progresses, and everyone around him speaks highly, I think that's also a sign that he's ready to take the next step within his career.
201-939-4513, that's the telephone number. You can also chime in on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go to the phones and say hello to Steve in Staten Island. Steve, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Belated New Year to you guys, first
of all. You too, Steve.
I hope you guys
Same
are doing
Steve.
Well. I just came out from under my rock this morning, and I have now resurfaced. And I got to tell you something, although as a Giant fan such as myself, yeah, it's crushing to see how this season went down. But you know what? The upside to it is there's always next year, right? I mean, where do we get him next year? First off, I got to say one thing about Gilbride. You know, I'll tell you, you guys know. Listen, Lance, you know, I called you guys in, and I was really super critical of his play calling this year. And I'll put it out there and tell you. I thought it was very, very predictable for the most part. But you know what, though? I look back on it now, and I got to say, he did help orchestrate two Super Bowls for Eli. So, to me, you know what? I wish him luck, whatever he does, because the guy definitely knows the game of football. And, you know, for Giant fans to really bash him right now, you know what? It's time to move on. The offense is starting to take shape. And you know what? Good luck to Kevin Gilbride, you know? That's how I look at it.
Hey, look, Steve, the bottom line, and you hit it right on the head, the Giants had their most consistent offense in the history of their franchise.
Yeah.
Under Kevin Gilbride. Mm-hmm. I just hope Giant fans, eventually when they look back on this era, they'll understand exactly how good the offense was under his leadership.
Well, you know what? A true Giant fan, a real Giant fan, he's going to know that. But you know what? Listen, let me get right to it, McAdoo. Oh, baby, talk about a Christmas present in January. I mean, how could you not be pumped for this? I mean, that's a message right there. And listen, Eli, we all know Eli can throw the ball, okay? With this guy now, I'm going to tell you something. Those little bugs, those little tweaks, those little, you know, couple of screws that need to be readjusted, this guy's going to be right on point. I love what he's going to bring to this Giant offense. This is a message right here, okay? You're sending a message to other teams, and you're saying, listen, we threw before. This time we're going to throw again, and we're going to throw harder, and we're going to throw faster, and we're going to throw better. Eli's going to be more pinpoint with his wide receivers. These guys are going to be on the same page. I got to tell you something. This was a good, good signing, and he's young. And I like the fact that he's got a little youth under him. And you know what? When they're young like that, you guys know. Listen, it's all they don't care. They'll just come up with, you know, they're not afraid to come up with a play that no one has ever seen them do. Because, you know what, they're going to take chances and roll the dice. And maybe that's what that team lacked last year. You know, maybe once in a while, like, I know it sounds funny. I used to be like, go Parcells a minute, man. Do something just to throw the team defenses off balance. Do a flea flicker. Do something. You know, just not every game, but do something to keep a defense saying, wow, you know, this is a different Giants team. And I'm hoping with McAdoo there, you get to see that this year. I'm hoping you get to see a completely revamped offense. But I got to ask you guys, and you knew it was going to come, because I'm going to tell you right now. Here's the $50,000 question. I like what they're doing on the offense by making the shakeups and the changes. Well, what are we going to see on the defense? Okay, because no disrespect to Fuel, but listen, they didn't actually look like they were, you know, on point this year, too, giving up a lot of touchdowns. And you know, yeah, they played, they had that nice five-game stretch, but they were against bad teams. So, you know, what are you going to see them do on the defensive side of the ball. As
Steve,
always, guys, you guys are the best. Thanks for taking my call, man.
Appreciate
Thanks,
the phone call,
appreciate
Steve.
The call,
and I understand there's some concerns about the defense, but for the most part, you look at that defense last season, John, and we've talked about this time and time again. They were terrible against the run. They went out. They brought the personnel in. Perryfield tweaked the scheme. They were very good against the run. Do they need to make sure that they beef up the secondary because of injuries that they suffered this season? Absolutely. But I think overall the defense took a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think what you take out of this year in terms of the defense is that you try to bring back a lot of the guys that were here last year because, like you said, they went from being a bottom five defensive team in the first 3-4 weeks of the season to being the eighth best defense in football. Now, I happen to agree with Steve. A lot of that came against teams that had terrible quarterbacks. The Minnesota Vikings, they gave up 7 points. The Eagles, they gave up 7 points. The Packers, they gave up 13 points. The Redskins later in the year in bad weather against Kirk Cousins, et cetera, et cetera. But they had enough games where they played well enough to win. Like that Lions games, for example, I thought they played very well in Week 16. So I think the defense, you don't look to make major changes this offseason. I don't think that's what you're trying to do. I think you stick with what you got. You talk about bringing back maybe Linval Joseph, Justin Tuck, John Beeson. Like you mentioned, try to strengthen that cornerback position a little bit. You do that, I think the defense will be good enough to win football games next year.
And you want to keep the depth at safety, too, because clearly they have a number of options depending on what happens with Stevie Brown's health. But, you know, I look at the defensive performance this season, John, what I take away, and I understand, okay, maybe the level of competition wasn't there every week where they were locking down the top five teams in the NFL. However, just look at all of the running backs that they contained. And I know that's one facet of a defense. You also need to be very effective against the pass, but the Giants took some of the top-tier running backs in this league, and they made them look ordinary.
Yep.
And that, to me, is a very big accomplishment. But the key is going to be, are you going to bring back some of the big bodies that made the impression on this defense, such as a Linval Joseph or a Mike Patterson? You want to keep this nucleus together because that's a big reason why they were effective against them.
Well, and the whole defense turned around when John Beeson got here. Right? If John Beeson is back, you hope that can continue. But if they happen to lose John Beeson, are you working back from square one? I think it's a fair question to ask.
However, despite the impact that Beeson had, I think it was more so the defensive tackle play, too. The defensive tackles, to me, at least did a nice job in clogging up the majority of the holes that were open the season before.
I agree. The Giants' defensive line did an excellent job. That being said, the overall play of the defense certainly improved and took a turn for the better when John Beeson started playing in that game against Minnesota on Monday night the 21st. That's when things really started to turn around. He also played a little bit in that Chicago game. Yeah, I take that back. He came with the Friday before the Eagles game. He didn't play in that game, and then he played for the first time in that Bears game. We were surprised that he did because he only had, I think, one full day of practice with the team in that first game against Chicago, and that's when things really started to turn. In fact, it was the second half of that Bears game where the Giants' defense, after that first half of the Bears game where they didn't force one punt in that game, the second half, they really looked like the defense that would close out the year.
However, Beeson made an impact in the first half of that game because if you recall, John, that was the contest where Eli Manning was throwing to the opponent more often than not. He did that over the course of the season, but he gets an interception early. Bears take over right in Giants territory, and Beeson, if I recall, made a key tackle on a third down to keep the Bears out of the end zone and force them to settle for a field goal. So it was that type of presence that all of a sudden you knew, okay, John Beeson's here to play. He's here to make a statement. Getting back to the running backs, weeks 4 through 11, starting running backs against the Giants averaged 53 yards per game, just 3 yards per carry. That involved Jamaal Charles, LeSean McCoy twice, Matt Forte, Adrian Peterson, Rashad Jennings, who had the most productive game during that span, and Eddie Lacy. We're talking about holding guys to, outside of Rashad Jennings, 67 yards or less. Now that says it all.
Nuts.
And those are name commodities.
Look, it says a lot. Granted, the last 7 games of the year, DeMarco Murray had a pretty good game against the Giants. Ryan Matthews had a pretty good game against the Giants. I don't remember what Marshawn Lynch's totals were
just
against
47
the Giants.
Yards.
Just 47 yards. And Alfred Morris didn't have big games against the Giants either in those two Redskin games, if I recall.
26 yards in the first meeting and 62 in the second.
Exactly. So the Giants rush defense, look, it was good all year. But, again, Tuck was a big part of that. Linval Joseph a big part of that. John Beeson a big part of that. So let's see what the Giants manage to get back here. And you can't, And here's where you run into trouble with the Giants. We'll get back to your calls in just a second. If you bring back all those guys on defense, what resources do you have left to improve the offense, which really was what killed this team all season long? So what Jerry Reese is to me biggest challenge here is sufficiently, logically, and using his mathematics to allocate these resources properly to get the offense back to where it needed to be, but at the same time, maintain that defensive performance. Can Jerry Reese put his finger on which guys on defense are the most important to bring back to maintain that performance? Because you know you have to bring a new personnel on offense. I don't care who your offensive coordinator is, to make this team better next year.
And I think maintain is a very appropriate term, because you want to not necessarily bring back everybody, because I think there's still certain positions where they can improve on defense or upgrade, but you want to have that consistency that was apparent this season. So when you're Jerry Reese, as you mentioned, John, it's pure financial decisions.
Right.
No emotions, no ties to the organization, just how does the money align with all of these defensive players?
201-939-4513. I haven't heard from this guy in quite a while. Abe is out in California, up early with us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Abe, good morning. How you been?
I'm doing great. You know, professionals never sleep. We work lots of hours.
I hear you.
Hey, I have a couple of thoughts, and I have a question. In the evaluation process, I'm a bit baffled. Since going back to the George Young era and the early Corsi era, you know, I'm looking at the various draft choices that have not been one-hit wonders, per se. With Jerry Reese, it seems that we've only had one-hit wonders. Now we don't know what the status of David Wilson is going to be. We really don't know the status of JPP.
What do you mean by, Abe, what do you mean by one-hit wonders?
Well, 1 or 2 years on the team.
Okay, I got you.
JPP hasn't played well other than 1 year, realistically.
Correct.
And David Wilson played 1 year as a return man. He was phenomenal. When he went to the premier running back position, I don't think he would really – that was really his the best way to use him. I thought maybe quite possibly using him as a third down and a punt return specialist. But I'm kind of baffled, because when I've called in, we get rid of Pope, and he's one of the best at his position, and I think it's more of a lateral move. You know, I'm more methodical, and I'm not quite on the McAdoo bandwagon just yet. It's more of a wait and see.
Well, you have to wait and see. He hasn't done anything yet.
Right. But here's my other thought is, for several years I've called in, and I don't understand how we can get rid of Pope. Okay, I could see Ingram, but not. Why not get rid of Quinn? Realistically, special teams has been subpar for years. So I'm looking at Pope more as a lateral move. I don't know what McAdoo wants to do, but I'm wondering if Pope could have stayed around and worked under McAdoo. I don't know if that would have worked or not. But my question, maybe you can answer this for me. My question is this, and this is a thought. I don't know if you've ever brought this up on Giants.com or not. I would have loved to have seen a tandem of David Wilson and Michael Cox as far as running the kicks back. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, they utilized Michael Cox at times, and David Wilson they didn't want to use as much, because, as you talked about, Abe, they wanted to transition him to have that number one running back position, so they didn't want to necessarily wear him down. I think both of them are suitable on special teams, but, you know, David Wilson, it's a balancing act. If he can't stay healthy as a running back, what makes you think that you're confident that you even want to expose him to further injury on kickoffs? That's the biggest challenge right now that the Giants are going to have to face. Cox got his opportunities, but if you're the Giants, you still need to explore other options. You can't say, okay, well, Cox showed some flashes, so we're fine, and we're just going to continue to give Cox more and more opportunities.
Yeah, Nate, right now I agree with Lance. I would say those two guys, assuming Wilson can come back healthy after this neck surgery, who knows when he's going to be back, those two guys would probably be in the top of the list for your primary kick return duties next year. But if you don't trust David Wilson to be your number one running back, you're going to have to find somebody to step in there and play that role.
Okay. Okay. Real quick, I have one quick question.
Yeah.
Who makes the decision as far as, if you remember when you reported when the fans were kind of disappointed in the draft, quite honestly, who makes the decision? Is it Jerry Reese or is it Tom Coughlin? We're going to go linebacker by committee. If you remember that, the fans and I were kind of disappointed in that, and we really thought we should have had a linebacker. So now we pick up Beeson. We see the benefit of having a true middle linebacker. So who made that decision? Because it seems like the evaluation process is not real good. And then now, do you think the Giants are going to go with the best person on the board this upcoming draft, or are we going to benefit from really what we need? Some really solid offensive line players.
Well, I think the philosophy is always to take the best available talent, Abe, to answer your question in terms of the draft philosophy. But you have to keep in mind, if you look at the Giants' needs, as you laid out, and you say, okay, right, they need an offensive lineman, and let's say the biggest need is a guard, you don't just say and reach for a guard in the first round just because you need a guard. I mean, there may not be a first-round caliber guard still left when you draft, so you can get a quality guard in round three or round four. So that's why you have to be very careful when you say the team should just take a player of need. They should take the best overall talent who's going to make an immediate impact.
And Abe, I'll say this. I don't think anybody sat there and said, we're going to do linebacker by committee by choice. That's one of the deals where they just didn't see a linebacker worth taking with any of their picks. And the result is that, well, we don't have much of a choice here, so we're going linebacker by committee. It's like the old thing with baseball. You know what it means when you have a closer by committee situation? You don't have any good closers on your team. It's the same type of situation. So I don't think anybody said, nah, we prefer linebacker by committee, so we're not going to draft anybody. I think that was just a product of them not finding a linebacker they liked enough in the draft to bring in to play on this roster to fill that need.
Okay. Well, you guys have a safe day. Thanks for taking my phone call. Have a safe weekend.
All right, you as well, Abe.
Appreciate it.
The other thing that I wanted to add to Abe's point, and your point about the linebacker situation, I'm not saying Dan Connor would have solidified the spot, John, but if guys stay healthy, who knows how this season plays out in terms of the linebacker alignment.
And frankly, in retrospect, in the last 2 years, we've said a lot on this show that the linebacker draft class isn't that strong. There's been some pretty decent linebackers to come out of the draft the last couple of years.
Well, speaking of that, I wanted to bring up the rounds from last season to see how these linebackers did
pan out.
There
are more guys than you think. Ogletree, I think, had a pretty decent year. Wagner, obviously, in Seattle had a very good season. Collins came on strong in New England. Michael Kendricks from a couple years ago certainly played well for Philadelphia this year. What are the names of my
Well, here's
forget?
The list from this past draft.
Okay.
Arthur Brown had a decent season for the Ravens. He was the highest linebacker taken. Then you had Jarvis Jones, who went to the Steelers. Manti Te'o didn't really make much of an impact with the Chargers. Well, he was hurt, too.
Remember, Jarvis Jones more of a 3-4 pass rusher hybrid guy, too.
Alec Ogletree went to the Rams. Rams overall had a good defense.
Yep.
And for the most part,
I think Ogletree started all 16 games, if I recall.
Kevin Minter went to the Cardinals. Cardinals also had a pretty strong showing this season. I'm not saying that Minter was the X factor, but you can make a case that he was somewhat of a difference maker. Now, outside of that, I'm not seeing a whole lot of names that jump off the page. I mean, the Cowboys took Devontae Holloman. In an ideal world, he wouldn't have gotten nearly as many reps, John, if a guy like Sean Lee and a guy like Justin Durant don't get hurt. So Holloman only got opportunities this season because of injuries on the Cowboys' depth chart. And then you keep going down the list. I'm still not seeing a great deal of game changers. I mean, the Bears took John Bostic. Once again, he's another guy. He was taken in round two, pick 18, who got reps, got opportunities because of all the injuries that the Bears suffered. But Bostic had a very up-and-down season. He was one of the young up-and-coming linebackers in the NFL this season, but he's got ways to go in terms of honing his overall game.
Yeah, you would have liked them to add somebody, and clearly they basically admitted they needed a linebacker when they brought in Beeson in that trade, and it was something they probably should have done a little bit earlier. And Lance, I got some breaking news here. I don't know if you heard this. My man at NFL Jints pointing this out. The Buffalo Bills have made a huge signing to their reserve list for next year. Do you know who's on board?
Well, I did see the tweet.
So Ramsey's sort of Bodden is back.
Well, we knew it was only a matter of time.
Stayed in New York.
It's nice that he stayed within the state.
California
there
guy, not sure he's going to love Buffalo up there. A little chilly.
Getting a head start with E.J. Manuel this offseason.
You can't teach height in upstate New York.
There you go.
Not a lot of tall guys up there.
Well, I'm sure he's going to have plenty of experience digging out of some snowstorms this winter.
Their red zone offense is going to go through the roof. Just throw it up.
If he makes the team, I just can't wait to field calls next season. If he does become a red zone target, can you imagine?
Thank goodness the Giants aren't playing the Bills next year.
You can only imagine what McAdoo could do with a target like Ramsey's Bodden. I mean, come on. Let's put things in perspective here. Everybody's excited about McAdoo, but just think if he had a weapon like Ramsey's Bodden still in the mix. I don't even want to go there because the pure speculation gets me excited.
I could tell. Your voice isn't cracking
anymore.
Oh, my
goodness.
It sounds solid.
Ramsey's Bodden in this new Giants offensive system. The potential could go anywhere.
Just wait till he starts dominating the Jets next year in one of those big AFC East battles.
Oh, boy. The impact that he's going to have. I know you're already scouting. I mean, he may be on your fantasy team next year.
Well, they're probably going to have a welcome back Ramsey's Bodden at MetLife Stadium if he goes to play at the Jets at the Buffalo Bills.
Once they take down the Super Bowl memorabilia, they can start working on the life-size posters of Ramsey's Bodden.
Big statue?
Correct. Oh, boy. That's going to be the
I've been pushing off on the Eagles quarterback in the game.
No, it's going to be the big game performance against Carolina. We're going to have some type of a post.
That was in Carolina, though.
No, but you're going to at least remember him for his production, and then you're going to remember what he did the following week, and there's not much to talk about.
And then right next to the statue of him doing that, it'll be a statue of him getting an MRI. Because he's
well, the Giants MRI machine does wonders.
201-939-4513. Tim is in Jackson, New Jersey. Tim, good morning.
Hi.
What's up, Tim?
Question for you. Well, the Giants in the draft, Khalil Mack from Buffalo in the first round of the 2014 NFL draft.
Well, Tim, you know what? I'm not sure he's going to last the Giants at 12. Mel Kiper came out with his first mock draft. He has those two big linebackers, Mack and Barr, which sounds like some type of detective crime investigation duo, going in that top 10. So
he's coming to the WB this season.
Yeah.
Moving along.
Right after Lance's favorite show, One Tree Hill.
Hey, that's a quality program. Don't get me started with that.
201-939.
I can't believe it's off the air.
4513. I can. Let's go to Steve in Washington, D.C. Steve, what's up?
Hey, what's happening, guys? Happy Friday.
What's up,
Same to you, Steve.
Hey, listen, I want to go ahead and...
Oh, looks like we lost Steve. Steve is a man of very few words. Steve, I'll tell you this. If you call us back, we had a little glitch. We will definitely get you back up and running. It wasn't necessarily a reflection of our feelings towards you, Steve, but feel free to chime back in on the conversation. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You could also chime in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We welcome your feelings, your emotions about the Giants offseason moves through social media as well.
Steve, that was my bad. I hit the wrong button on the phone thing. I knocked you off. I'm not going to lie. That's my fault. Call us right back. We'll get you right back up, all right?
Now, I'm still waiting for Ernest to call back, but that's a whole other story.
Ernest did not make a return while you were on vacation.
I did make a statement when you got hostile with Ernest. I made my feelings known. Some people on Twitter said I was backpedaling a little. Hey. The results speak for themselves.
See, now, we have Len in Maryland on hold, and I'm happy this guy is calling up because Len loves it when we talk to this guy, our buddy Pierre down in Dallas. Pierre, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, what's up, fellas?
How are you?
How you doing, Pierre?
Good, man. I hope y'all having a great week.
We are.
It's Friday, brother.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, man. It's Friday. Hey, I wanted to ask you a question. It's funny because it looks like you guys need offensive linemen. It looks like us, we guys, the Cowboy team needs defensive linemen. And I don't think that the defensive lineman crop is good this coming out this year, not like it was last year. And I don't think the offensive line crop is as good this year as it's come as it was last year. So it's like you guys need offensive linemen and we need defensive linemen, and neither one of us are being, you know, fulfilled kind of thing, you know. And the other question I want to – I usually buy Pro Football Weekly. They have a annual guide that comes out, a draft guide.
Right.
I know I heard that it's no longer can you still get it through an app or online, or because they have an excellent draft guide?
You know what? I haven't heard that. If Pro Football Weekly is ceasing that draft guide, that'd be a shame, because that is a pretty good resource.
I know they actually do some spots online, so maybe they're just focusing on the internet mainly, because they even do some features that you could check out, I think, on their website. So that may be a route that they're going. They're just trying to change with the technology.
And, of course, you can go to Giants.com, and we'll link you here to all the other mock drafts that come out around the NFL. So you can always check that out, too. Dan Salmon does a good job of keeping track of all that. He links you all around the league.
And John Schmelk will be doing plenty of prep work himself as well. Just give him some time himself on the back.
Mike Farmer's killing me on Twitter for not doing my draft work yet. I keep going. It's
the
not
draft
even
is in May. My
well,
goodness.
Thank you.
Well, I know. I shouldn't have defended you on that. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. Mike, go about what your business on Twitter. Don't worry about it. I'm sorry, Pierre. What were you saying?
Do y'all believe, what do y'all think about the offensive line crop and defensive line crop coming out this year?
You know what? I think, as opposed to what we saw last year, Pierre, and thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it, is that you get more skill positions, and that pushes the guys up front down, because they're not the sexy skill position picks, and I think teams will probably be looking for more of those types of players. But there are still a good three or four offensive tackles that I've seen projected to go in that first round. I haven't seen many interior offensive linemen projected as first-round picks, which really isn't a surprise. When you have a lot of skill position guys, or corners, or pass rushers, receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, those type of guys, and not a lot of safeties in the first round either. By the way, just that one Alabama safety, Clinton Dix, is really the only guy that I've seen be projected in the first round for safeties this year. So you got a lot of skill guys. A lot of the big fellas get pushed to the second round, which is a good thing, because that means you can get a quality player to help you up front round number two, or maybe even round three.
Well, the other thing to keep close tabs on is you're going to have the Senior Bowl coming up, and this
right.
is a time where guys tend to emerge. They make a name for themselves. So sometimes guys that have fallen under the radar during the collegiate season can now all of a sudden really, you know, take full advantage of their opportunities with the scouts around. I mean, a guy like Eric Fisher, for example, last season during the course of the college year, wasn't as if he was stealing the headlines left and right. He made a name for himself as the draft approached, and then all of a sudden became the top overall pick. So that is something to also keep close tabs on. Getting back to Pierre's question, because he mentioned that the Cowboys need to tweak their defensive line, the Giants more so on the offensive line.
Which I think is a very true statement.
It is. The difference, though, between the teams, see, to me, Dallas needs to do some heavy lifting with the draft more so than the Giants because of the cap space. See, the Giants have some financial flexibility. Dallas doesn't.
Yeah, Dallas is $20 million over the cap right now. They can easily fix that, or they can get Tony Romo, DeMarcus Ware, also Brandon Carr to maybe renegotiate their contracts.
That would help.
And they might also try to convince DeMarcus Ware to take a pay cut, because if you take a look at his salary numbers the next 3 years, he's owed literally about $18 to $20 million per season over the next 3 years. It's a mess. You know, fans complain about the Giants not having cap space to make moves. Look at Dallas' cap situation the next 2 years. It's a disaster. Next year, they'll be able to survive bringing back about the same amount of guys, but in 2 years, all the chickens come home to roost, and I think that might be the reason they kept Garrett, they kept Kiffin, they kept all their guys in place this year. This will be their one last final run, and if it doesn't work out, 2015 is going to be the blow it all up, start from scratch, and really try to start this thing new. Keeping Tony Romo, you know, keeping Tyron Smith, keeping Dez Bryant, but all those older guys from the last generation, the DeMarcus Ware, the Miles Austins, and I think Austin's going to be gone this year. You got Jason Witten could even maybe be in that conversation.
They drafted Gavin Escobar.
Exactly. So I think they might see a lot of those old faces you're used to seeing from the Cowboys-Giants rivalries disappear after next year.
And the reason why they're going to need help on the defensive line, not to get overwhelmed with all of the Dallas Cowboys personnel on this show, which is transitioned somewhat.
I think Len's already there, by the way. He's not going to be happy with you.
Well, I'm still going to work Len up then because I still have more to say about the Cowboys personnel. But what Pierre was talking about, Jason Hatcher, for example, who is one of their most productive defensive linemen, is due a significant pay upgrade because he's going to have an opportunity to test the market. So that's going to be a guy that they're not necessarily going to be able to pencil into the lineup next season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. 201-939-4513. Matt is in East Islip. That's on the island. Matt, what's up?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
How are you?
Doing well, Matt.
Good. I was listening yesterday, John. It was a great show with the guy from Packers.com.
Yeah, he gave us a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I like what he had to say about how McAdoo would utilize the players and basically not bringing in people who, like an Adrian Robinson, who they don't know, just, hey, let's give him a shot, put him out there, and see if he could fit the scheme. Like, they need to bring in guys who are they know are going to fit the scheme. You know, Brandon Myers, they weren't really sure. Good, he's a good receiver, but he's not the best blocker.
Well, yeah, and I think what Spofford really focused on is that he's not going to have his scheme and force players to do what they're not comfortable with. He's going to, you know, meld the scheme around the talent of his players, and I think that's a good thing for any coach to do.
Right, yeah, no, that's just what they need. And just a couple guys I think the Giants should target for running back, if, you know, everything up in the air with David Wilson. I think Rashad Jennings, if they could get him from the Oakland Raiders, I think he'd be a good fit. And, you know, I just want to see what you guys have to say about all that stuff. And thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling it, Matt. Appreciate it.
Jennings had a very productive season. I mean, the Giants know that by going up against him. And I think the Raiders are going to do everything they can to keep him, Matt, because Darren McFadden is also a free agent and a guy that's been plagued by injuries during the course of his career. And I'm sure there's going to be a number of other teams that took full notice of what Rashad Jennings did. Because keep in mind, Rashad Jennings, throughout the course of his career, was primarily a backup, dating back to his days with the Jacksonville Jaguars when he was playing behind Maurice Jones-Drew. He goes to Oakland, and because of all the injuries, he has an opportunity to shine. So there are teams that realize, listen, this is a guy that doesn't have a great deal of mileage on his legs, even though he's been in the league for quite some time. That's an attractive option. The Giants would be certainly smart to explore all options. I just don't know from a financial perspective if the smart thing to do for the Giants is to throw money at a running back, because there are so many other needs on offense. I wouldn't get caught up in, oh my God, we need a name running back. They just need a guy that's going to stay healthy and a guy that can fit and buy into whatever McAdoo's plans are on offense. Because I don't want to downgrade running backs in the NFL, John, but I think you would agree that for the most part, I don't want to say they're a dime a dozen, but you can find a fifth-round pick, a seventh-round pick, and as long as he can pass protect, he can buy into the system, he can be productive in this league. Look at Ahmad Bradshaw. Ahmad Bradshaw was a seventh-round pick. You don't need a first-round pick, and you don't need a big-time name to do well in this league.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, I'm looking at Todd McShay's ML Kuiper's mock drafts. McShay has six offensive tackles going in the first round. Kuiper has five and all three. Both guys have three guys going in the top 12. So there will be offensive linemen that go in this draft. There always are. Offensive tackle, a premium position.
Well, offensive linemen specifically on the outside, as you touched on, when you're talking about protecting the blind side of a quarterback, teams want to get a young guy who they can groom, they can invest a great deal of money in, and will be able to stay with the quarterback for years to come. So that's a big reason why you see tackles go much higher than the guards. And right now, I would say the Giants are in more of a need of interior offensive linemen than outside offensive linemen, meaning the tackles, because you have Pugh, and whether or not you're happy with what Beattie put out there this season, you have a lot of money tied up with Beattie. So they're not going to have the opportunity to make some changes on the left side. And I think they could settle for late-round picks to improve the guards, or what I would like to see the Giants do, make some splashes in free agency. Bring in an interior offensive lineman who's a veteran who you know also has a track record of staying healthy.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Roldy in Bayshore, Long Island. Roldy, what's up?
Good morning, John. Good morning, Lance.
How are you?
Good to hear your Good to hear your voice on the air, Lance. We missed you on the air.
Well, it is nice to be back. Appreciate that.
John was holding you down, though, I got to say. But we did miss you on the air, though.
Well, listen, John's going to take any opportunity he can to throw me under the bus, because the truth is, when he's not here, I would do the same thing. So I can't necessarily blame him.
Absolutely. Now, referring to what you were saying earlier, John, about, you know, Jerry Reese has a lot of work to do as far as the offense, mainly the offensive line, but they also got to, you know, Jerry Reese has to do a good job about who stays in the defense and who goes. And I'm all for it. Like, listen, I don't want to overpay a guy there, and especially we need to, you know, concentrate on other areas. I mean, I would love to have Tuck back, but, you know, hopefully we could get him at the right price. Same with Beeson. But if he's demanding a lot of money, then it's not worth us, you know, spending all that money on one player that, you know, yes, he brings the leadership. And again, most of the time, you know, during the morning shows, we always talk about the one bad part about Beeson's game is he can't play the coverage. You know, if he's not going to be coming back at a fair price, I don't think it's worth it. I mean, I love Joseph in the middle, but if he's going to ask a lot of money, then you know what? We got Jonathan Hankins right behind him. There's a lot of guys that I feel like, you know, should be their chance to step up and make him and step up and play better if we do lose a couple of guys on defense. And I want to know what you guys think about that. Thank you guys for taking my call.
All right, Roldy, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate you chiming in. And you're right, they do have some depth at the defensive tackle spot. In the event they lose Linval Joseph, you do have Hankins, who I think took full advantage of his opportunities. Mike Patterson is a guy that they'll obviously have to re-sign, but won't be as pricey as a Linval Joseph. Marcus Kuhn, assuming he could get a full offseason under his belt, is fully healthy. He's another player that they can plug in. So even if you lose a reliable every down defensive tackle, they still can turn to their depth chart. That is the one position I would say that they're probably the most comfortable at outside of safety. So they don't necessarily have to break open the piggy bank and say, if we don't keep Linval Joseph, we're going to be in a very tough position. Now, I'm not trying to downgrade Linval Joseph. I think Linval Joseph is somewhat underrated, because if you take him out of the equation, who's to say the Giants are as stingy against the run as they were this season? So I think the Giants need to definitely consider bringing him back, assuming that it doesn't put them in a position where they have to sacrifice other positions.
Because, like you said, I think they believe with the other guys on this roster, they can continue strong play there without taking a big-time step back.
And I think they can, but that doesn't mean that you take Linval Joseph out and Jonathan Hankins and Marcus Kuhn are going to come in and everything is going to be consistent for 16 games. Because keep in mind, Kuhn still has the injury question next to him. Whenever a guy comes off a torn ACL, sometimes it takes a season or two to get back to 100%. And Hankins, although he showed some nice flashes, he's still a relatively young guy who still needs to hone his craft and become comfortable with an NFL system. So you got to be somewhat cautious that, okay, hey, a rookie came in here, did nice things in Prairie Fuel system, but did we really see enough to say, okay, we can rely on this guy every single down and be an impactful defensive tackle? Because the other thing to consider, definitely don't know that, as you tried to say, when
we don't
the
mic
wasn't
yet.
On.
Correct.
Thank you. I'm glad now you had an opportunity to share
I'm
that
trying
with
to
us.
Multitask.
You
yeah.
are, and you're doing a tremendous job.
Not
because
really.
Because anytime we can pat you on the back.
I keep hanging up.
Well, I
people.
Want you to think you're doing a good job. Told you, if you're getting hung up on, it's because John's just trying to do too much this morning. Because clearly we have some nice tech gurus around that are doing a tremendous job to fill the void. That's a whole other story. I don't want to get off topic here. But sticking to Roldy's question about the defensive line and the fact that, you know, there's some depth there, here's another thing you have to take into consideration. What happens if the personnel changes somewhat at defensive end? Like an offensive line, John, I think you would agree, you need some chemistry on the defensive line. The defensive end, the defensive tackles need some reps next to one another. So let's say Tuck's not back. Let's say JPP is not a guy that you're ready to turn to each and every down. You may have some new personnel.
Well, he better be.
Well, I know he better, but
he better be.
We've got to think of the situation's worst case scenario. And remember, JPP, as one of our previous callers brought up, I think it was Abe, you know, since that rookie year, it's all about what have you done for me lately.
True.
But getting back to the point, you need chemistry. So what happens if the every down defensive ends change? That means that Hankins essentially has to get comfortable with new defensive ends. So you want to have a full offseason. If you're going to make changes, let's put it this way. If there's going to be some new alignments on the defensive line, you hope that these guys are fully healthy during OTAs and minicamp because they're going to need to build that chemistry during the course of those months so that you don't have to use the preseason and the first couple of regular season games to really do the heavy lifting.
I agree. And look, defensive line this year was a strength in terms of the run defense. The pass rush got better as the year went along. But at some point this offseason, I know Giant fans don't want to hear this, you're going to have to pick. You can't have everything. You're not going to be able to sign a big wide receiver, two big offensive linemen, a running back, a tight end, a safety, a cornerback, defensive lineman, linebackers. You're not going to be able to sign everything. Eventually, you're going to have to say, I'm going to trust this young guy to step up and play well at that position. And that's why I don't think they're going to bring Joseph back, not because he's not a good player. He's an excellent player, like you said, but they have a second-round pick in Jonathan Hankins. And you draft the guy in the second round to play. And you have to have confidence that this guy is going to be able to step in there and play.
And like you said, did you see enough? You know, sometimes I feel we get caught up in hype in the NFL,
right,
John, where you see a rookie play X amount of snaps, and you're like, wow, he really looked great. Well, let's see a bigger sample size, a very small sample size for Hankins.
201-939-4513. Back to our phones. Len has waited patiently. He's in Columbia, Maryland. Len, good morning.
Len, we're getting closer to that Bruno Mars performance. The clock is ticking. I hope you're worked up.
Yeah, listen, I am, but I was a little disappointed to find out that what are they doing, bringing in Red Hot Chili Peppers to share the stage with Bruno at halftime?
Do you have a problem with the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
No, I don't, but I'd like to see one or the other. They are excellent. There's no question about it. That would have been a good choice.
One of the greatest American bands that's out there right now.
Well, but when was the last time we had a shared Super Bowl show? And also, man, it's been 9 months since Bruno was announced. Why all of a sudden Red Hot? I want some inside information, guys.
Well,
I'm not against either one. I think they're both great, but both.
Well, number one, in addition to Giants history, we know our fair share of pop culture. So in terms of the last time a duo, I mean, Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson had a little duo going, which you recall, it didn't necessarily work out very well.
And someone else came out and performed with Madonna in the year the Giants were in Indianapolis, too. I'm trying to remember who came out and performed a song with Madonna at the end of her performance back in 2011. I don't remember who it was. There was someone that came out and performed the last song with it. Who was it? Nicki Minaj came out and did one song with Madonna, I believe, back in 2011.
And I don't know if this counts, but Destiny's Child did make an appearance with Beyonce, and they had broken up.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe that's a borderline.
Jay-Z never showed up during that performance,
I don't think.
Right?
Jay-Z was in the back facilities with the champagne, getting them ready for the post-operations.
That 2011 halftime show was a terrific halftime show. The only thing I regret is I was pretty far away in the stadium.
You know what, though? It was actually a cooler performance to see Len being high up because you could see all the cool graphics and the way they did all the laser projections on the field.
Yeah.
I thought that performance was actually more powerful the farther away you were from it.
I thought that was a terrific halftime show. Well, I hope, unless they're going to put Red Hot Chili Peppers indoors somewhere just in case we get some bad weather. But it'll be both those folks.
Yeah, Len, I got to tell you, that's a good point. Anthony Kiedis loves to go shirtless in his performances. He might have to rethink that being outdoors in the Super Bowl in 2014 this year.
Well, that's the rationale why they're bringing in the Red Hot Chili Peppers, because you were asking for some inside information. You see, Bruno Mars, from what I've been told, when the temperatures dip below 30 degrees, the vocal cords don't necessarily perform at a very high level. So, therefore, Red Hot Chili Peppers are an insurance policy.
And Lance, obviously, can relate to that, considering his last couple weeks.
Exactly.
And his struggles
last
with the vocal
week,
cords.
The temperatures dipped, and it screwed me up.
All I can say is I can't wait for the Super Bowl to be over, to think that there's two foreign teams in our stadium there. And there's going to be somebody sitting in my seats. I know the Jets are there too, but I'll be glad. And you guys probably, you get your workspace back, and everything will be.
Well, they're already taking over. The tents are up outside in the parking lot outside MetLife Stadium. You know, we've got some NFL officials trying to steal my Frosted Flakes here at the facility. I'm not very happy, Lane. So, I can't wait for this shindig to end as well.
I agree. Listen, a couple of football points, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. Really? Football legend? You want to talk football?
That's
fine.
Not what Big Blue Kickoff's about.
Listen, you know, if the Giants want John Beeson and Justin Tuck, and I mean if they really want him back, I think we got to make those signings before free agency starts. Once free agency starts, we're going to have to pay a lot more, guys. We've got to get this. If we want him back, I think we've got to make the signing before free. If they hit the open market, from a money standpoint, I think we're in trouble because I think we've got to spend our money on the offensive side of the board. Look, we got Eli, you know, the $20 million man. We got to surround our assets. We're bringing in this new hotshot assistant coach who, by the way, my evaluation next December on his performance will simply be, did we go five and one in the NFC East?
Well, Len, I don't think it's just fair to judge him on team record. I mean, I think, you know, what happens if the Giants have a bunch of injuries on defense? The defense falls apart, but the offense plays spectacularly. So I'm not sure it's fair to judge, you know, Ben McAdoo on the team's overall record. You have to see how the offense did.
I'm telling you, we got to have a winning record in the NFC East, and everybody's got to contribute to that.
No question. I agree.
We can't go 3-3 in the East. Well, what do you think about my statement about Beeson and Tuck? If we want them back.
Well, you know what? I honestly have to look at the details of the NFL rules. I believe you can re-sign your own free agents before free agency starts because the Bears already did that with Jay Cutler. So my understanding is that is within the league rules. I think the Giants will look into it. But quite frankly, I think there's a better chance of getting that done with Tuck than getting that done with Beeson. I think John Beeson, being in the prime of his career, you know, coming off of a very good season with the Giants, will be looking to cash in and maximize his dollars maybe a little bit more than Justin Tuck. So I think it's going to be tough to get Beeson to sign unless you blow him away with the contract before free agency starts. I think you have a better chance with Tuck.
Boy, somebody else. But if we wait for that point, you know, if we really want these guys, if we really think they're difference makers, I think we got to put the push on, and then spend the rest of the money on the offensive side.
No, Len, I agree. But my point though is that Beeson is so interested in getting a big contract that even if you sign him before free agency starts, you still might be overpaying him.
See, Len, and I agree with John. I think what John's alluding to is the fact that it's not that the Giants are not going to make an effort to try to keep him, but from Beeson's perspective, he wants to at least see what his opportunities and his options are, whereas Tuck, who has been tied to the organization for so long and is at the latter stages of his career, I can see him stepping back and saying, you know what, I'm content with taking maybe a below-market deal just because I'm comfortable here.
Yeah, I believe wholeheartedly, Len, if the Giants give Tuck a market value or slightly below market value contract for a guy his age with his performance and his injury history, he'll come back.
Right.
And I think you can get him before free agency starts. But I think to get Beeson, you're going to have to sign him to a top five, top seven, top eight middle linebacker contract in order to get him back before free agency starts.
Wow. I just keep thinking this is the fan speaking, and it's probably wishful. From what you guys are saying, it's wishful thinking here. But, it's probably, I'm going to say this probably because I mean, what do we do if we don't have John Beeson? I'm not sure he's that good, John, in terms of being the eighth best paid MLB in, you know, football. But the alternatives are staggering, and it's a huge hole.
Well, Len, that's the thing. Good middle linebackers don't grow on trees anymore. You can count on two hands how many difference-making middle linebackers are in the NFL. So they're going to come at a premium. How long have the Giants been looking for somebody since Antonio Pierce left?
True. Well, maybe you overpay, John. Maybe that's the one guy we overpay for.
But you need to take into consideration, Len, they've got a lot of other holes that they need to fill. So are you willing to maybe sacrifice another position just to keep Beeson?
But here's the problem. You're going to have to bring in a linebacker regardless. And you know Beeson works here. Now, are you worried about his injury history? Maybe that'll scare you off a little bit. Maybe you can find a better option for a little less money based on what your pro personnel says. But I do agree with Len. You're going to have to spend the money on a linebacker, whether it's John Beeson or somebody else. You better get a playmaker in here next year at that position.
Okay. At middle linebacker.
Correct.
Okay. Now, I'd like to see that be Beeson. And let me say one other thing about the linebacker.
Yeah, real quick.
Once we get past Beeson, you know, I'm probably going to get killed on Twitter for this, but I'm okay with our linebackers for next year. If we get Beeson,
you want to bring back Keith Rivers?
I think he's part of that run defense equation, and you're not going to have a Pro Bowler at every position, John. So I can live with Rivers again. Listen, he's right there in the wheelhouse, a 4 to 6 year veteran. I mean, he's right there.
But is he good?
Remember now, I'm saying all this because we got a lot of holes on offense. I mean, you know, once we get past Beeson, we got to let linebacker go and go on to something else. You know, hey, one quick thing on age.
Very quickly, Len.
The Redskins just signed an offensive coordinator. He was their
tight
ends coach.
He'll 27, right?
He'll be 28 years old at the start of the season. And his last name is McVay, and he's the grandson of John McVay, who was with the Giants in the late 70s. I don't know if you remember that name.
I do recall the name.
But you talk about a young offensive coordinator. My God, 28 years old. Wow. All right. Let's go, Giants. Listen, have a good weekend, guys. And Lance, I'm glad you're back.
Thanks, Len. Appreciate it.
Appreciate the call, buddy.
And that's actually a trend piggybacking off of Len's point where we've seen a lot of young offensive coordinators. Kyle Shanahan, for example, and I know his father is a prominent head coach, no longer in the league, but there have been a number of teams that are taking a chance with a young guy who can maybe transform offenses. The other thing to take notice of, think about it, 3 of the 4 teams in the division are going to have new offensive coordinators. The Eagles, Bill Lazor, he went to the Miami Dolphins to take the same job. He was the QB coach. So, you know, they're going to change some personnel with respect to the offensive play calling for the Eagles. The Redskins are going to have new personnel now that Jay Gruden is the head coach. The Giants have McAdoo. The Cowboys, I mean, who knows if they're going to make changes to the staff. But Dallas right now, to me, is the only team that appears to keep their staff intact compared to the other teams. So there's going to be a lot of new schemes, I think a lot of new looks within the NFC East because of some of the new coaches that are going to be added to the mix. And I'm seeing a lot of reaction on Twitter. Len brought up about, you know, what would be a good ballpark figure for a guy like John Beeson. I'm going to try to look back at the 2013 free agent class, what some linebackers got from a financial perspective last season to determine maybe, you know, where a guy like John Beeson would fall within that range.
Yeah, I think you got to focus on middle linebackers too, because obviously a very impactful position as opposed to outside linebackers.
The other thing to keep into consideration here with John Beeson, and we were talking about, and I agree with you, John, that I think he wants to explore his options from a big picture perspective in the NFL. Number one, contracts are not guaranteed. Number two, how many times do players have an opportunity to test the market?
Once.
So if you're Beeson, regardless of whether or not the Giants treated you well and you're comfortable, you would be stupid if you didn't necessarily explore your options.
And he did sign that one contract with Carolina, but then after the injuries, he renegotiated and it basically got cut in half. I'm not even sure how much guaranteed money ended up getting out of that contract.
And given his injury history, John, Beeson's coming off one of his most productive seasons in his career.
You got to cash in on that.
You've got to be thinking to yourself, if you're his agent at least, wait a minute, John, before you sign on the dotted line and you come back to the Giants, let's see what I can get you. Let's see what other teams are willing to throw your way.
I got 3 calls left on the line. Let's take them before
very excited
say goodbye.
About these calls, by the way.
Let's go to Anthony in Phoenix first. He's been holding patiently. Anthony, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
Doing well, Anthony.
Excellent. You know, I've been listening in, and what you're talking about with the linebackers, you know, we still don't know about Dan Connor. He hasn't played long enough for us.
Well, Dan Connor, after he was injured, released, waived by the Giants last year, picked up and was playing for another team by midseason. I'm trying to remember who he picked up with. I can't remember what team he played for. But Dan Connor did finish the season playing for another NFL team, Anthony.
Yeah, but supposedly he's a free agent now.
Right. I'm not sure the Giants are going to want to bring him back.
Okay. As far as an offensive line, you know, I'm looking at Michael Orr's out there. Now, he's got a little age on him, but what do you think the chances of picking up Michael Orr? That would be beautiful.
I think Orr's a guy the Giants would look at. He's played right tackle. He's played left tackle. I think that's the type of player the Giants would consider in free agency. My feeling is that if you're going to go offensive tackle, I would think about drafting one in the first round and then going from there. And in free agency, exploring more of the interior guys. Because I feel like in free agency, you can get an interior offensive lineman and not pay a super premium for him, but still get a very good player to play guard or center. And I would use the draft, if you want to explore bringing in a new offensive tackle. Like I said, Kiper and McShay both have 5 or 6 going in the first round, 3 in the top 10.
Okay, excellent. And as far as a running back, isn't that Bell available from Detroit?
Joique Bell, you're talking about.
I don't think Joique Bell's a free agent, is he?
Let's take a look. No. He may be a free agent. I'll confirm
that. Am I wrong
about
that?
Well, what is it that you like about Joique Bell that you think he'd be a good fit for the Giants?
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. He's got some speed. He's got some power. He can run the outside. I like him. He can run inside. He reminds me of a back the Giants used to have. I just saw Oh, goodness, I can't think of his name now.
Joique Bell is a restricted free agent, by the way. So if the Giants are going to want him, they're going to have to pay, and they're probably going to have to give up maybe even a draft pick, depending on how the Lions end up protecting him, which is not going
to
happen.
And given Reggie Bush's injury history, I think the Lions are going to do everything they can to keep him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, guys. Nice show.
You
appreciate
got it.
The
thanks
call.
So
by
much.
The way, Dan Connor went to Carolina. One other note I want to bring up from one of our tweeters. We haven't heard from on Twitter, heard from Trina NY in quite a while. It's good to see her back. KTNT80, I wonder who's thought about the fact that Peyton can do what Eli did and win a Super Bowl in his brother's home stadium.
Well, could very well happen. May have an opportunity to do that.
If you had to pick one team, and I'll get to the last two callers in a second, that you think has the best chance of winning the Super Bowl out of the final four, who do you think it is?
Well, from a momentum standpoint, I'd probably have to lean towards the San Francisco 49ers. I think they're playing arguably their best football right now
okay.
on both sides. The Patriots, though, I can't overlook, John. And they're also playing their best football.
Right.
This is a team that I was not very high on earlier in the season.
I will jump back on you with picks before we say goodbye. We'll talk about the last two games after we finish with these callers. And this is the call I was excited about. We're going to bring in our good man, Ernest in Connecticut.
Oh, boy.
Ernest, before you go, I want to say something. I apologize for screaming at
oh,
you last week
great.
On the phones. I got a little upset. I was a little testy. That's my fault. Thank you for calling back. Welcome back to the show. I hope you're having a fantastic morning.
And you know what? Competitive people like we are, those things happen.
Excellent.
So I understand that.
I appreciate it, Ernest.
Don't let him off the hook that easily, Ernest. Come on. I mean, give me a break here. This is how you're going to react? Oh, come on, Ernest. I was expecting more fire from you this morning.
But there is a couple of questions. When the Giants released, well, when that new offensive coordinator released Mike Pope, I was really confused about that particular move. I mean, I know that they want, you know, a change and everything, but Mike Pope, don't you think that he's one of the best tight end coaches in the league? Would you want to really start that deep in the hole, not knowing who you could probably bring in to replace him?
Well, Ernest, I can tell you, Ernest, I agree with you. I think the move caught a lot of people by surprise. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming. I don't think Mike Pope's performance, per se, had a ton to do with it. I don't think it was one of those deals where Mike Pope, oh, you did a terrible job coaching last year. We're going to fire you. I don't think that's really what's behind this. I think it's a couple things put together. One, I think they're trying to get some new, fresh ideas in, and obviously Mike Pope's been in the league a long time. I think Ben McAdoo, to a certain extent, is going to want to bring in his own people to teach his system. So you have to, you know, obviously move out some of the older guys that have been here before. I think that's part of the deal. And I think part of it, too, to be honest with you, this offense was so bad this year, I think the thought coming from the front office was probably that, look, we want more than just one change on the offensive coaching staff to try to mix things up next year. I think all those things put together go into the decision to let go of both Coach Ingram and Coach Pope.
And, Ernest, one other thing to add to what John laid out, McAdoo has experience as a tight ends coach.
Very true.
So that may have also played a role. Hey, if we lose Pope, at least we can turn to McAdoo to help groom some tight ends. And I agree with John. I think McAdoo envisions, he has a couple of names in mind where he wants to bring in his own guys, and that's understandable. An offensive coordinator wants to surround himself with guys he's comfortable
with. And, of course, we have to see if the Packers give him permission to talk to maybe their quality control guys over there to move up the way. We don't know who these guys might be or if the Packers will even give him permission to take anybody. So, Ernest, those are still things that are up in the air.
Okay, and one other question. Two other questions. Coughlin take some of the blame for some of that? For that, you know, for the offensive problems. It seemed like everyone else was taking the blame, but Coughlin, I think, has a big hand in that also. Wouldn't you say?
He does, Ernest, and I think the heat is on Coach Coughlin considering how the offense played last year. It wasn't just Kevin Gilbride's offense. It was Tom Coughlin's offense, too. But I believe, and I think the Giants thought, is that his track record in terms of managing the team, managing the locker room, goes a long way towards this team's success. And they didn't believe one bad year of offense warranted making a move at the coaching position.
All right, and one other question. Have you heard any update on David Wilson's surgery? Because I know he was supposed to go in for surgery yesterday, and I don't know I haven't heard anything, so I'm wondering if you guys heard anything about how that went, or anything about that at all?
Well, Ernest, they haven't announced so far whether it was successful surgery or not. I'm sure that'll come down at some point in a simple press release. I'm sure if something went badly, we would have heard about it by now. So the Giants are saying they should be back. I think next fall was the last thing that the Giants said in a press release. So you're looking at, end the training camp, beginning of the regular season. But look, they're going to take their time with this. This is a back. This is a neck. This is a disc. This is, career stuff with a neck surgery like this. So, Lance, they're going to be very cautious.
And they have experience with a few guys that have had surgeries. And, Ernest, appreciate the phone call. Real happy to have you back on the program. Was expecting a little bit more fire brought the way of John Schmelk, but the fact that you were a true professional and you accepted his apology, it's okay.
By the way, you missed Charlie in Maine. He called up, your buddy, a couple days
Charlie
ago.
Charlie and I have patched things up. I mean, that happened a while back. Listen, I understand he was watching what Jake Ballard and Michael Boley were doing elsewhere, but we had our differences. We set that aside. But I gave him a reason to continue to listen to the program. Your approach to Ernest, Ernest needed a week to recuperate. I think
it
Charles
was a week
called back rather quickly.
Yeah, he did.
He didn't get scared off so quickly.
I don't think we have any long-standing feuds left. I think
well,
all our
Ernest
feuds have
was
been
the
buried.
Most prominent
well,
one.
Well, I know.
Yes, we've each had our fair run-ins with some of the callers.
The last two times Anna D.C. has called in, we haven't even really
a little bit
gone
more
at
peaceful.
It with her.
Correct. And she called in during the offseason, too, after Gilbride was let go. And it was a fairly good back and forth. Though, if I recall,
it got a little
then
crazy.
It got,
at the end.
Did, yeah, I was going to say. I think the conversation went back to Eli Manning running the read option or some ridiculous offensive scheme. We'll leave it at that. By the way, I went back and I was doing some homework while you were patching things up with Ernest, which was very lovey-dovey. It really got to me emotionally. And I look for those type of things to play out.
I could tell your voice is cracking.
Yes, it is. You could tell. I mean, it really got me all worked up. But I was looking back at some of the middle linebackers that
got
some deals. The one guy that you could throw into the conversation is Danelle Ellerbe.
How about Sean Lee's extension?
Yeah, but I want to look at him more of a free agent. I don't want to look at it a guy that was with a team, had a few years, and then they just added to it.
Though I think Lee's contract could be a decent guide due to his injury history and Beeson's injury history too. Make it more of an incentive-laden deal where you give him some guaranteed money, but then after 2 or 3 years, if things don't go well, you have a chance to get out of it.
I think that's a fair point. In terms of age, though,
I agree.
Sean Lee a little bit younger.
All Ferris extension,
you need to take
not
that
a free
consideration.
Agent. I agree.
See, Ellerbe, he's not necessarily old, but he was coming from a previous stop with
right.
Baltimore going to Miami. Miami gave him five-year deal, $35 million. So we're talking seven per year. Just to put things in perspective.
And I think that's about where Beeson's going to have to land, to be honest with you. I think you're looking at a five-year, $35 million type of contract. I think that's a good ballpark, give or take. And I think, by the way, last year with the Cruz deal, I think he landed just about where we thought he would land. We said that unless he was willing to accept something in that range, he would have kept holding out, and he decided to settle. He didn't get between 8 and 10. He settled for around 7.5, 8.
However, the difference is Cruz was a restricted free agent, so the Giants had some leverage.
Big difference.
See, Beeson can go to the Giants and say, well, listen, look, Cleveland is giving me this. What are you going to do? He can field other offers where Victor Cruz knew other teams aren't going to throw a great deal of money his way because they would have had to surrender a draft pick. So it's a little bit different in terms of the two situations. But I think Ellerbe, that type of financial package is something in the ballpark that what Beeson is going to look towards, as John mentioned, just to give you an idea of maybe what the Giants would have to throw out there in the event that they do want to aggressively pursue him, maybe even before he hits the market.
By the way, David Wilson just tweeted out 57 minutes ago, thank God, surgery went well.
There you go.
Doctor surprised when they came in and saw me standing and walking to the bathroom on my own. Ha ha. Then they probably sent them right to bed and said, what are you doing, you idiot? Get back in bed. You just had back surgery.
So there you go. Perfect timing.
There you go.
Right on this show. He announces it.
Something tells me he's not listening to the show.
No, I don't think that that was his biggest priority after he got out of surgery.
Let's see what else do we have.
Though he was curious whether or not Ernest was going to call back into the show.
And
through the grapevine.
At Giants Gab, Flashback Friday. What is your point? Ernest, what is your point? We love it. Final call of the show. Let's go to our good buddy, Dave in Rochester. Dave, good morning. How you been? Dave.
Lance, welcome back.
How are you?
Thanks, Dave. How are we doing?
Good. Good, good. Actually, I just called to see if maybe Johnny maybe punched some old ladies in the face this week or took some puppies while John, you know, while Lance was away. Even though I'm not convinced, even though Ernest just ruined my bit, I'm not convinced totally that John is healed. Now, Lance, while you were gone, somebody that called back, Shakes called back this week.
That's right. I forgot to tell you that.
Oh, yeah. Man. Boy, the things
and,
I missed.
And he said that Johnny hurt his feelings. That's why he stopped
calling. No, we did. It was both of us. Do you remember the call when we couldn't understand what he said and we thought he said something regarding certain acts that would have been amusing talking about John Beeson? But it was just a bad connection, and we made a joke.
Okay.
Apparently, that really got on Shake's nerves, and he didn't want to call back because
of
that.
So that's why he had a long hiatus.
Well, that and the Giants' performance. He said he wasn't handling
it that,
well.
I think, is more of a legitimate reason. That was a bit of a stretch.
But Shake says he's going to start calling back more in the offseason.
Well, that's good.
It is very
good. Everybody had emotional ties to Shakes. We had tweets and we had callers weigh in saying they were emotionally worked up and worried about the well-being of Shakes. I mean, we were going to have maybe an alert sent out in the Maryland area just to make sure that he was still breathing. So
well,
I'm glad to hear that.
I don't think that last call, though, excuses Johnny for maybe some anger management classes or something to that effect. Maybe he needs a little sabbatical from the show, and maybe we have Ivan come in for a couple weeks. This is just maybe me thinking out loud. You know, but Ivan, that guy's got the personality of a pen cap. But, you know, I'd rather
that's a little harsh.
Oh, boy. No holds bar here.
And by the way, if you want a little bit of, you know, less anger, I don't think going in that direction is the way you want to go, by the way. Just saying.
I'm just saying, I just don't want you walking down the hall giving Bob Papa the goon hand. Next thing you know, Papa's on the ground like a club baby seal, and the show gets canceled.
Dave, you brought some A-list material.
Oh boy,
today.
He's working on some new stuff.
Yeah, I've been working all week on it. But anyway, I was just addressing Johnny's issues, but it sounds like everything's back in full circle. We got the Ernest back, we got Shakes back.
We like it.
And,
yeah.
Hey guys, have a great weekend. The show going to be on Monday?
Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we will be off, actually. The office is closed on Monday, so we will have no show on Monday. That's a great point, Dave. I'm happy you brought that up so I can make that announcement now. Lance will come in with me, do the show on Tuesday. We'll have fun with that. And then maybe I'll have Paul Dottino come in one day next week. I think maybe we can have some fun with that.
It's time to have him stop running laps and come back in with those white pants.
If I could throw in one more thing, I think I heard a rumor that on Dottino White Pants / Facebook that coming for Valentine's Day, top 10 Dottino Valentine's Day gifts.
Oh, there we go.
Nice.
Thanks, Dave.
Oh, we're going to look forward to that. We'll circulate that on social media.
Appreciate
it. All right, Dave.
I tell you, it's not just from me. It's from Giants Nation has contributed to this. So
oh, we like that. All right, Dave. Thanks for the call, buddy. Boy.
Now, Dave,
he's been working on that for a while.
Oh,
you can tell. He was waiting for you to get back on so
there
he could take some shots at me, and then he moved right on.
Well, speaking of taking shots at you, see, where Dave, I think, could have even more material, I can't wait to see what it's going to be like when the NFC team invades the Giants facility.
I might get kicked out of here. I'm not even sure. Honestly, in all seriousness, I'm not even sure we're going to be able to do a show that week.
Well, I know that had been discussed behind closed doors, but I just want to think about potentially somebody coming into John Schmelk's office and utilizing his computer. I am just dying. dying to see this development.
You know,
I
Jim
can't
Harbaugh
wait to see the explosion.
And
that's
his
going
$8
to take
khakis better not mess around in my voiceover booth. Okay,
my goodness.
If he shows up and thinks he's gonna, you know, go in there and record some type of San Francisco radio spot, he's got something else coming.
I can only imagine somebody comes in there, changes the settings on the ISDN line. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that would.
This
yeah, that would, be,
would
bad.
Be epic.
It would be bad.
I would love to just do the show just so we could provide play-by-play of how they are operating within the Giants facility. Then Dave is going to have plenty. So that would be the week to really keep close eyes on the emotional well-being of John Schmidt.
Now, see, that's what I get upset about. Now, what you would really want to see is how Dottina would react watching the team moving to all Giant players' lockers, both
oh,
in here and at the stadium. He might, his head might explode.
Or somebody using the table in the cafeteria where he sets up shop each and every week to do his homework.
And they have their little meetings.
Correct.
That could be a big issue.
Yes. That would be something. I wonder if there is somebody who's the equivalent of a Paul Dottina for the NFC team coming in. Like, can we get somebody to run laps with Dottina around the facility or on Route 3? Just somebody to keep him company.
I'm not sure if Paul, he might be covering the NFC team for FAN. I'm not sure. I'd have to find out about that.
That's pretty convenient for him.
I think LaPresti, who covers the Jets for FAN, is...
That's usually what they do. They have
I believe he's doing the AFC team. Now, in the past, Jerry Recco has done the NFC team, but I'm not sure with his Boomer and Carton responsibilities, he's going to be covering the NFC team this year.
If I'm correct, though, the last few seasons, they had him solely focus on that show.
See, I thought since that show traveled out there, they also used him as the beat reporter. Maybe I'm wrong.
Because it's possible that he did some work.
Because Dottina didn't travel out there to cover the NFC team last year. For them.
Oh, he did not?
I don't think so. I don't think he did.
Well, it's probably because Dottina had a lot of other big priorities on his plate, such as breaking down every play for the Giants and getting a head start on his offseason breakdowns.
Well, he's
and
already
so forth.
Posting draft
well, of
people.
Course.
He's watching those his game tape on YouTube, as he calls it.
Well, I joked with him on Twitter. I said, how long till you study every Green Bay Packers rep for the last 8 years?
And he had an answer right for
no,
you.
No, yeah. He goes, well, McAdoo was a tight end and a QB coach, technically. He wasn't the offensive coordinator, so there's only so much that you can take away.
And a lot of 13 personnel
yes.
running on first down.
Well, that was a mistake, though. He corrected himself. He meant 11 personnel.
Right, that's correct. They run, I believe it was 85%
correct.
Three wide receivers.
See, this
sets
is what happens
personnel.
When the offseason starts a little too early. Guys get careless, especially a guy like Paul Dottina. And this is what really gets me concerned for the well-being of Paul Dottina.
See, I didn't catch that correction.
Well, because I sent out the tweet. Which initiated the 13th person.
Oh, see, that probably happened after I blocked you.
And then, and then he then made a correction.
I see.
That's the time frame.
But they do use a lot of single and double tight end sets there. Not a ton of fullback stuff with John Kuhn.
Well, because Kuhn they use as a running back a lot, too.
Right. They use him as a lead blocker in short yardage, use him as the up back, do a little short yardage handoff near the goal line, but they will use him as a pass protector and a receiver in their third down packages. So we'll see who could fit that role here for him when he gets
and
here.
And speaking of Packers personnel, I don't know if you've addressed this while I was gone, but there's a number of Packers free agents.
And James Jones is a name that did come up.
And JerMichael Finley I've been asked about on Twitter, but you know, you got the injury concern there. I wouldn't necessarily
he
be banging down the door for him. Correct.
Who knows?
James Jones, I could understand. A guy that could stretch the field.
Boy, he would drive Giant fans nuts with his drops.
That would be an issue.
Mike Farmer might die on Twitter. That Devils logo will be nothing but a mushroom cloud.
The Devils are not doing too well with shootouts, so I don't think
Devils
Mike's got enough to focus on right
hockey
now.
Hockey, I really don't follow, but I don't think the Devils are doing too well.
No,
well,
they
are
not.
No.
We'll see if we can get Mike to tweet a little about the Devils. I would like to see his thoughts on the Devils team. I'm not saying that I'm an aficionado when it comes
Mike
to Devils hockey, but
Mike constantly takes shots at me about the Knicks. I don't say a word to him about his Devils, okay?
Well, see, this would give you the ammunition.
Well, I don't
see,
want
a,
to, though. There's
a
no
real
reason to
guy,
be.
A man who will fight back.
There's no reason to be nasty.
Well, I'm not saying you got to be nasty, but you could be playful and show that you do your homework. And you have some time now. You know,
not
if you
really.
Took some time away from the Knicks blog and you did some research on the shootouts, I'm telling you, they've been struggling with the shootouts. So that would be a shot I would take back at Mike Farmer.
Where did you read that? I haven't seen you watch a hockey game in about 15 years.
You have to stay up when
you
do.
Is it a match
do.
Or is it a game?
In terms of hockey?
Is it a hockey game
it's
or
a
hockey
game.
Match?
It's a game. Okay. I mean, what? This is not tennis here. I mean, come on.
Well, it's a soccer match.
True. It's a game.
Okay.
A lot of games when it comes to you. match.
I'm just having fun now.
Unbelievable.
All right, the game's this weekend, in all seriousness.
Yes, thank you.
I think it's going to be Denver-San Francisco. I'll get right to the meat of the issue. I think Denver wins that game by more than a score.
Wow.
I think they
really?
Win, I think they win that game convincingly. And here's my reasoning. Where the Broncos have their weakness on defense, I don't think the Packers have the weapons outside to take advantage of it by attacking their corners and getting the ball down the field. I don't think the Broncos have the wide receivers to get that done. And I believe the Broncos' offense of Peyton Manning will put up a good 27 points on that Patriots defense. They have a lot of young guys. I think Peyton will watch enough tape where he can take advantage of them. I think the Broncos win that game 27-17.
I like New England, and I always disagree
wow,
with you
okay.
anyway. Well, here's my concern
on the road
about
in Denver,
Denver,
huh? And frankly, I'm just tired of hearing about Peyton Manning and him not being able to win. I really hope he beats Tom Brady.
That's not why I like New England. And I'm tired of that. I'm tired of the cold weather. I'm also tired of the whole Manning versus Brady debate. Listen, they're both excellent quarterbacks.
Exactly.
Enough is enough. And they both deserve a great deal of credit for what they've accomplished. And they both make the talent around them 10 times better.
The two best quarterbacks I've ever
by
seen
far.
Play football. And Aaron Rodgers is coming up, but he's still young right now. Manning and Brady, to me, the two best quarterbacks I've ever seen. And again, neither of us really saw Marino in his prime or Elway really in his prime. I saw the end of Elway. I saw the end of Marino. You know, I've seen enough tape of them to know. But seeing career beginning to career end, those are the two best quarterbacks I've ever seen. And that includes Brett Favre, by the way.
And it's been well documented. So no argument there. My concern about Denver is the defense. And I think that New England is going to have opportunities to take full advantage. They lost Chris Harris, their top corner.
Yeah, but they don't have good receivers outside, Lance.
But look at what New England has done
they've
the last
run it.
Few weeks.
They've run it.
But they've evolved with their offense. They're
they've
taking
run
what
it, though,
the defense is giving
but they've
them.
They've run it.
Brady, though, is going to have some opportunities to throw the ball. And let's be honest, Julian Edelman's put up some quality numbers.
He's
I know the personnel's not great.
He's a slot guy.
Yeah, but look at who they're lost now in the slot.
Yeah, but he's
they're not Chris Harris
he's
anymore.
He's not beating you deep. I don't mean he's beating you for 8-9 yard catches
fine.
Here and there.
And that's perfect. How has New England got to beat Denver? They got to win the time of possession battle. Keep Manning on the sideline. Come on. What else you got for me? Listen, I'm ready to come back with you. The teams that beat the Broncos milk the clock. They keep Manning on the sideline, John. That's why San Diego beat them on that Thursday night football game. They won time of possession.
But how good was the Broncos' defense against the run last week against San Diego? It was excellent.
However, I would say San Diego abandoned the run down 17-0. It was more a strategy than a scheme thing.
Yeah, but they had about three and outs in their first three possessions to Chargers, even after a terrible face mask penalty on the Broncos. That gave them a first down on a 3rd and 18.
I think you're putting too much stock in this Denver defense. I really do.
No, I don't think the Denver defense is that good. But I don't think the Patriots have the weapons outside to take advantage of it. Look at Brady's numbers the last few weeks. Even as the Patriots have won football games, they have not been good.
Well, listen, the receiving core was young this year. They lost tight ends
it's
left and
Brady's
right.
It's not Brady's fault, but
no,
it's just the fact
he doesn't
matter.
Have the big name guys right. that he had in the past. However, that sometimes makes New England that much more dangerous because they'll spread the wealth and they'll change it up on you. See, to me, the key to this game is Denver's defense. How do they approach New England? If you're Jack Del Rio, what do, John?
I stop the run.
Okay, so you're bringing the extra guy in the box. But that means that you're leaving your secondary out to dry. You take Chris Harris out of the equation. Look at what Jammer did in that fourth quarter. He looked absolutely lost. Phillip Rivers threw a Hail Mary that was in the air for a year on a Sunday, and Keenan Allen still made the catch.
Do the Patriots have anybody of Keenan Allen's capabilities?
Tompkins, Dobson could go out there and make those type of catches.
Or they could drop them.
They could, but first of all, it's been a learning curve for those two. I agree. They've shown some progress.
Eh.
And you have Edelman, who's been very reliable. Plus, the running backs catch out of the backfield. Let's not forget about that.
How many points do you think the Patriots will be able to put up on the Broncos?
On
defense?
The Denver defense? Oh, you don't think they could put up 27 to 31 points on that Denver D?
I think it'd be very difficult.
I think it's going to be an offensive shootout.
Because I think the Broncos, much like the Patriots, are going to have very long, sustained drives. I think Bill Belichick's going to make that Bronco team work their way down the field methodically. And I think you're not going to, I don't think you're going to have a ton of offensive possessions. And look, I know the Patriot defense has been better, but I don't love the personnel. I think a lot of it has been scheme. And, you know, Belichick's a great defensive coach. I get that. But I don't think you're out-scheming Peyton Manning.
Well, but the system is strong enough to have confidence in it, John. The offensive system, too. Think about it. The one thing you say about New England, why have they gone into the playoffs each and every year, and clearly the personnel has changed? It's the system. There's something about the structure on offense and defense. And They lost Spikes, which is going to hurt them, but they've been without Mayo for the bulk of the season. They've been without Will Fork. It's not as if they lost these guys last week.
I got you.
They've had plenty of time to adjust.
Yeah, but do the Patriots even have the number of corners to match up with all the weapons the Broncos have? I know Aqib Talib's an excellent player.
He did a nice job on Demaryius Thomas.
No question
the first
about
time
it.
Around.
But you got Demaryius Thomas. Then who's covering Eric Decker? Then who's covering Wes Welker? Who's going to deal with Julius Thomas? I mean, the Broncos have more. Dude, if you line up the offensive weapons between the Patriots and
that's
the Broncos,
point.
The first four or five guys, I can even throw Knowshon Moreno in there as a better running back than anyone the Patriots have. The first five guys you choose might be Denver Broncos. Five before you get to one New England Patriot. One.
But you're going based on name.
I'm going on performance
true.
And production this year. To hell with names.
But name
who
is really
better?
What jumps off the page. And Julius Thomas, by the way, did not play in that first matchup against New England.
Great
so that
point.
Could add a new wrinkle. Moreno had over 200 yards rushing in that first meeting. The reason why you can't look at that first meeting so much, though, John, turnovers plagued both teams, and you can't rely on that happening again.
No question about it. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot, and one of the reasons I think Peyton Manning maybe doesn't have the same success in the playoffs as he's had in the regular season, a couple reasons. One, obviously the teams are better, so you're not going to have the same level of success. But to a different extent, I think during the regular season, Peyton Manning puts so much extra film work in, and he's so much, frankly, smarter and understands the game more than everybody else, that really gives him an advantage over other teams. But when you get to the postseason, everybody locks in a little bit more. And I think Peyton, it's impossible for him to lock in more, because he's already locked in as much as he can be during the regular season. So while everyone else's preparation and focus goes up a couple notches, Peyton Manning's remains the same, because he's already maxed out that level of preparation during the regular season, so he doesn't have quite as much of an advantage over his opponents because their level of preparation is closer to his, so his intelligence and what he sees doesn't give him as much as an advantage against these playoff teams that he does in the regular season.
Well, that's a fair point. I think he can even take it further, the fact that now he's going up against a guy like Tom Brady, who clearly is just as detailed-oriented as a guy like Peyton Manning.
Well, and that obviously goes towards better competition. He's going up against a defensive coach like Bill Belichick, too, obviously. A big difference.
And they've had a good track record against
him, too. Who knows how to play against
Peyton
Manning. Right. But I think it's going to be a really good game. Don't get me wrong.
I would agree. And I like New England in a close one. I don't think it's going to be lopsided. I mean, you feel Denver's going to have an opportunity to pull away. And I think they'll be able to score on this New England D. Don't get me wrong, but I think the Patriots are going to have plenty of opportunity to score on Denver's D.
Again, I'm not saying it's going to be a 21-point game. I think in the fourth quarter, it'll be a one-score game. I think the Broncos will win by either 7 or 10 points. But it'll be close. The other game, and surprisingly, this is the later game on Sunday, just because of the permutations of the schedule and all that type of stuff, and the West Coast time, too. Exactly. And, boy, this is going to be a different type of game than Broncos-Patriots, where that might have a lot of scoring. This game is not going to have a lot of offense. It is going to be a grinded-out game. You'll probably have a couple ejections. You'll probably have some unsportsmanlike conducts. You'll probably have some personal fouls. You'll probably have some concussions. You're going to have coaches that don't want to shake each other's hands after the game. You're going to have a lot of trash talking. My God, if you could ever mic up Anquan Boldin and Richard Sherman in this game, I'd love to hear what those two guys say
nice
to the entire
forth.
Contest. My goodness, it'll be like White Man Can't Jump the movie all over again with all the trash talk. It'll be fantastic. But that is going to be a heck of a war between those two teams.
These two teams are essentially mirror images of one another. Good running games, very solid defenses, and mobile quarterbacks.
One thing that's bothered me this week, just because of one or two games, now I hear people saying, oh, Kaepernick's a better quarterback than Russell Wilson. Can you look at the body of work during the season, please? They were on completely different levels. Wilson, he was an excellent quarterback this regular season. And as you've made the point earlier, you've been anti-49ers all season.
Yeah, I have not been a fan of
them. You have not been.
Not at all.
Kaepernick has not had a good regular season.
He's done good in this winning streak.
Sure.
But
now that he has his weapons back.
Correct. But even with the weapons, it's not as if he's been in a position, John, where he's had to win a game with his arm. I want to see a game where he's got to put it on his shoulders.
I agree.
I want to see it. Until he does it, I'm not sold yet.
But that's the beauty of it. The Niners are constructed and they're coached to a point where you don't need Kaepernick to put the team on his back to win the game on his own. I don't think he's going to have to win this game on his own on Sunday.
Well, because
either.
Seattle's weakness is stopping the run.
Bingo. And the Niners don't have a weakness like that. And frankly, where the Niners can get into trouble is if you slow down their pass rushers. By the way, I'm not sure the Seattle offensive line is going to be able to do that. They've had some issues on the offensive line this year, the Seahawks. I don't think the Niners will let that Seahawks defense get to them as much. I think their offensive line will protect Colin Kaepernick. And like you said, I think you're going to be able to run the ball. The Seahawks, the way their defense operates, everyone wants to get upfield, upfield, upfield. If Gore can find a crease here or there, you can break some 15 or 20-yard runs on that defense. And I think the Niners win a very, very close game. I think you're looking like a 14-13, 17-13 type of 49er victory.
I've been going back and forth with this game because it's really going to be so close. And the one thing I'll tell you, I hope the officials let these guys play, John, because we talk about how the Seahawks get up in your grill. Niners, I want to see them react to that physicality.
And you know what I want to see, though? It's going to be fun because I think the Niners receivers, Crabtree, Bolden, I think they like physical play. They're bigger guys. They're possession receivers. Look, I'm not saying it's going to be easy for them, but I think it'll be very interesting to see two physical cornerbacks go up against two wide receivers. Look, Anquan Boldin's basically a running tight end. The guy's a monster. He's 240 pounds. Those guys like physical play. I want to see Bolden and Crabtree deal with these Seattle corners. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Against Green Bay, it was Crabtree. Against New Orleans, it was Bolden. I wouldn't be surprised if Vernon Davis has a big game. I mean, it seems as if Kaepernick is spreading the wealth, and a new guy is stepping up time and time again. To me, the X factor, it's Percy Harvin. If Harvin does not suit up, I do not like the Seahawks' chances. I think they really need him to spread out that San Francisco
defense. Has he practiced yet this week?
Defense. No, he has not. He did not practice yesterday. Concussion. Still dealing with getting through the protocol. Not so much the hip, but it's the concussion. And I thought he was going to be an X-factor in the Saints game. He was. He made some big plays on offense before he went down. Think about it. The Niners' strength is that linebacker core, John. You're not going to find. But even to take it to another degree, it's the linebackers.
Agreed.
Harvin, you can utilize him in the run game. You can run him out wide. That's going to get the linebackers to move a little. You don't have Harvin out there, they're not moving so much. They're going to keep clogging up those lanes.
Yeah, I think Russell Wilson's going to have to make some plays in this game. Well, I think the Niners can have a lot of success running the football, and I'm curious to see how Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor deal with Vernon Davis, by the way. I think that'll be another very fun matchup to watch. I think the Niners will be able to run the ball on the Seahawks. I don't see Marshawn Lynch having one of these big 25 carries, 150-yard games against this Niner defense. They're too big, they're too physical, and their linebackers are too good.
I think that, like you said, there's so many similarities with this team. How about special teams, too? You know, we talk about how good Seattle is in terms of the punt coverage. Maybe depriving San Francisco from getting good field position could give Seattle somewhat of an advantage.
Ted Ginn, big-time returner.
Well, Ginn is now with Carolina.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Ginn's with Carolina.
You'll take it back when they played the Giants.
Sorry about that.
You're going back
in time. That's my fault.
And Kyle Williams and everything. None of those guys are with the Niners anymore. Times have changed. I'm going to go right now with San Francisco in a slight edge. I'm going to agree with you, but I want to see how the injury report plays out with Percy Harvin, because if Harvin plays, you take into consideration that, you take into consideration that the home field advantage is going to be somewhat of a boost for Seattle. I would not be surprised if Seattle, you know, wins by a field goal or two. But let me see what happens with
Neither Harvin. Would I. I wouldn't be surprised either. I could see this game going either way. I think the Niners will do just enough to win. And frankly, not to break it down to make it too simple, whichever team makes the fewest mistakes are going to win this game. Turnovers
so
are
forth.
Going to be really, really important in this game. Which quarterback protects the football? The heck with making more plays? I want the quarterback that doesn't put my defense in a bad spot and gives the other team possession in your own territory, because I think both teams are going to struggle moving the ball the length of the field. So whoever can get that short field, and you know, all you need is a couple first downs to get in the field goal range, that might be the team that scores enough points to win.
Well, I'll even take it a step further. I think both of these teams have shown throughout the playoffs, even the latter stages of the regular season, they can't punch it in. San Francisco did not do a very good job against Green Bay or Carolina. Same thing with Seattle. They left opportunities on the field. So maybe it really comes down to the one team that punches it in when they get within the 20. Neither of these teams have been very effective there.
I'm going to give you one key for each game. This is how I simplify this. Can the Patriots figure out a way to throw consistently with their wide receiver core on the Broncos? If they do, I think they have a good chance of winning the football game. And again, I'm not impressed by the Broncos defense. I'm more worried about Brady having reliable targets in the passing game wide at a wide receiver. That's one. The key for me, the other game to me, can the 49ers run the ball consistently on Seattle? If they do, I think that gives them a huge advantage in the game, and that to me could be the X factor, because that's the one method I see either team having to move the ball consistently. I don't know how the Seahawks are going to move the ball consistently on the Niners' defense, but I see a window and a way for the Niners to do it against the Seahawks.
Well, I would agree with you. Plus, if you're Seattle and you take away the run, you're now forcing Colin Kaepernick to win the game. And you have the number one pass defense in the NFL. So wouldn't you want the game to head in that direction?
And I'll tell you what, I was surprised last week how many opportunities the Seahawks secondary had for turnovers in that second half, and they blew them. Oh. You know, that one pass right off Earl Thomas's hands that ended up going to a long game. Cam Chancellor had a dropped interception in that game. I don't remember if it was first half or second half, but it went right in his grill, and he dropped the ball. And that's something the Seahawks haven't done this year. They've really taken advantage of those opportunities.
Mental lapses that we saw, and that gets to my key for the Niners-Seahawks game. Since both of these teams are so physical, John, I think it comes down to whichever team keeps its cool.
Yeah, that
you
might
know,
be a good
the
point.
Who wins the mind games? Is it going to be the Niners wide receivers that are going to listen and look at what Sherman and Maxwell do and say, we're not going to let you get to them? Or is the trash talk going to take over? That may really come down to it, because look at what hurt Carolina this past week, the penalties. Eight penalties. San Diego, eight penalties. We hadn't seen that for both of those teams.
Now, I think here's the most important thing to talk about for this Sunday. Will you be making an appearance at Chateau Schmelk to watch the NFC and AFC Championship games?
Right now, it's up in the air.
But why is that?
I would say, hopefully, I could at least come for one of the games.
I would hope so.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't like to make bold statements
what
and bold predictions because then I'm
going
to be criticized.
You're a 10-minute subway ride away. What's
stopping
you? Well,
it's not the travel. It's other things that are playing out this weekend in terms of prepping for upcoming gigs.
I think you can come by for at least one of the games.
We will.
If you don't, I'd be very annoyed at it.
Well, we'll see. Maybe I'm looking to get you worked up next week. So maybe there's a rationale behind my movement. We'll see.
Can't, won't even commit.
I don't want
to
make
by
any bold predictions, but we
co-host.
Will.
What
I do want to see this wine rack. That I'm dying to see, clearly. I mean, that would probably be the selling point to come over.
Boy, that thing was a pain.
Oh, I know.
Up.
You
Holy
laid
God.
It out earlier in the week.
They're up now, though, finally.
Has it stayed in one
yes,
piece?
Yes, it has. And I created a little fail-safe mechanism to keep them up.
I was actually pretty
proud of my ingenuity
to figure out
a way to keep those shelves
I can
up.
Imagine how you put it up. I mean, there must be Elmer's glue on top of Elmer's glue.
A little duct tape? Some gaffer's tape? No?
Jeez.
All right, lads. Appreciate the time. So you got see, this is why this weekend's games are great. You got Seahawks-Patriots, and I understand your reasoning. I got Niners-Broncos. You understand mine. It should be two great football games.
Absolutely. Listen, we got the top four teams in the NFL, I think, being showcased.
Everybody, and whoever wins, you're going to have a good Super Bowl, in my opinion, so it should be a lot of fun.
And before we close out the show, 7 with a T, backing me up on the Devils' front. They're 0-8 in shootouts this season. Just wanted to throw that out there.
If they won half of those, they'd be second in the division. Who knew?
Well, Farmer says they are borderline in terms of the playoff standings, and clearly I'm not going to debate that, but you win a shootout or two, that's the difference maker right there.
Now, hockey fans generally don't like the shootout.
Well, I'm not a big fan of it either. I'm not considered a diehard hockey fan.
To me, whatever gets the hockey.
But I also don't like ties either.
To me, whatever gets the hockey match over quicker is better for me.
Hey, the NHL playoffs are by far one of the best situations.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, NHL playoff hockey. It's hard to match that.
I never played hockey growing up. I can't get into it. I know a lot of everyone says that, and seeing hockey in person, I know it's supposed to be one of the best things you could ever see. I just can't get into it. I don't know what this is. What it is,
Mike Farmer. Here's the ammunition.
Mike's really going to dislike me knowing that I'm not a hockey guy.
Well, this is great. That's why I'm happy that you brought this up, because as the Knicks continue to struggle, how about my boy Lance Stephenson, Brooklyn's own, Lincoln's own, embarrassing the Knicks?
Well,
did you see the reverse layup?
He could get in line. Honestly, end of the third quarter, I turned the game off. I was done. I was toast. I was so annoyed, I couldn't deal with it anymore.
See, this is why.
He gave up 60 points in the first half to the Pacers. How do you do that?
Well, the Pacers are good, by the way. There's a distinct difference between
they're
two
good
teams.
Defensively, they're not an offensive team.
They got
you
some
can't
depth
give
this
up
season.
60
They've
points.
Got depth.
You can't give up 60 points to Indiana in a half.
Well, you
right?
can't give up 60
points
to anybody.
It was the most points they scored in a half the entire season. 63, by the way, to be completely accurate. I think Louis Scola hit a long jump shot to give him 60.
I think the next blog is really going to be juicy. I think we're getting a taste of it right now. But see, notice how you were putting the team up on a pedestal after that 5-game winning streak. Oh, they beat the Spurs. Everything's starting to turn. And the Bobcats, a little Kemba Walker, and then a little Lance Stevenson.
By the way,
two New York natives who went on to bigger and better things.
I have, by the way.
Reality set.
I have a college basketball game on Monday, too, by the way. So I have to do prep work this weekend, too. So I better see you at my apartment on Sunday. We're gonna have issues next week. May I have the Tino come and work on Tuesday.
Well, we may need to.
Now I'm getting worked up.
Well, prep work, you know, we've got to put our priorities straight. Just saying, I have prep work too.
Have a good weekend.
Sounds good.
It's a three-day one. Enjoy it.
We'll see you Tuesday.
We'll see you on Tuesday at Giants.com. Enjoy the football, everybody.